Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Understanding Data Power, Memory Utilization, and Consumption. Today's presenters are Matthias Siebler, Dominic McHale, and Moses Alatapopo. Dominic has been a member of the L2 Data Power support team for 5 years. His primary role involves debugging web services within Data Power, but extends to integration in the network. He has experience with XSLT, C#, C++, Java, the common languages used for customer-developed client front-ends and back-ends, and network analysis. A majority of these customer engagements involve best practice use of the appliance, which includes restricting cases of resource exhaustion. Moses had 6 years with IBM working as a Data Power Level 2 software engineer. His area of expertise: XML, XSLT technologies, web services, integration, security, multi-step processing, and device monitoring. Matthias has worked with Data Power for over 10 years, the last seven at IBM. He has been the L3 support team lead for the past 4 years. His areas of expertise include network protocols and debugging, Data Power best practices, and multi-step programming. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Matthias. You may begin.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Can we advance to slide number 2, please? So we wanted to talk today about a number of different areas regarding memory and data power. And I just wanted to sort of set the context for this discussion. Memory and data power is particularly challenging because the data power devices do not use any sort of virtual memory. So the amount of memory that can be taken by all the different services and data transactions and monitoring and other activities on the device all has to share the same fixed amount of physical memory. And so this is unusual and provides some interesting challenges for administrators and users of data power to be able to understand how this gets implemented in production. The decision to not have any virtual memory in data power was made from the beginning of the data power devices and was driven by desire to have the best performance available. Virtual memory has the overhead of paging out the disk, and so the decision was made, among other factors, that device did not have any virtual memory. So that decision having been made, we want to talk a little bit about what that means in practice for people who are using data power. So there's a number of disparate topics that we'll be talking about today in this area. So we'll start by talking about some of the different status providers that we have in data power to understand how the memory on the device is being used. And then we'll talk a little bit about how you can use SLM and other configuration options to try and help manage the memory usage on the device. We'll talk about some particularly tricky parts of memory management involving asynchronous actions and other asynchronous calls. And we'll talk about how caches can impact your memory usage. We'll talk about how style sheet transforms utilize memory, and this is of particularly complex area, so we wanted to make sure to spend some extra time talking about that. Once we wrap up those main areas, then we'll open up for some questions, and we can take questions on those specific areas that we covered or any other memory-related questions that you might have about data power devices. Okay, if we can move to slide 3, and actually if we can skip ahead to slide 4 briefly. Okay, so I wanted to start this talk off by talking about this main display here, which I assume everyone is very familiar with, but has a lot of complex information about it. And slides 3 and 4, we'll bounce back and forth between them, talk in detail a little bit more about what each of these numbers means. So this is the CLI output for the show memory command, and you'll get basically the same data if you access it through the Web GUI or SOMA or SNMP. And what is this telling us here? Well, you've got a couple of numbers which are pretty explanatory. The installed memory here is for a XI-52, and this is the output from the version 6001 firmware of the device. The output of this status provider has changed slightly in the past. If you are familiar with the numbers from 500 or 402, you'll see something slightly different, but the basic underpinnings are mostly the same. These status providers can change in the future. Sometimes we'll add add more data, but for the most part, they stay relatively static. So what can we see here? And the first thing that's pretty explanatory is the installed memory, which is the physical amount of RAM that we have on the device. And that is our upper limit, what we can actually do. But right above that, you'll see the column for reserve memory. And that is a fixed amount, which is needed by the device for various under-the-cover things, such as the OS and whatnot, which cannot be used by you, and this limit is set, so it really is not something that you can count on as part of your capacity planning for the device. Then we have the other main columns, which are of more interest. So the memory usage, the top one there, most important thing, and that is telling you the amount of memory that is, of course, being used right now by different parts of the device. And that actually is the counter. If we can move back to slide number 3, please. That is the amount of physical memory taken at the time by the router. And so this is the most useful counter that you have for understanding how heavily loaded your device is. And it will tend to, rise and fall as usage increases and decreases, though depending on the internal caching used by Data Power, also sometimes it can rise and hold steady. And that's a point which I want to dig into a little bit more, because it sometimes is a point of confusion among some of our customers. The memory usage can go up and stay up even after traffic has fallen away, if there are certain caches that have been filled up by a device which are holding onto memory. And these caches can then be reused again by future transactions without further increasing the used memory. And so sometimes we have customers who contact us, and they have concerns the fact that their memory usage went up during a peak period and then did not appreciably fall down again during an off-peak period. And depending on the configuration of the device, this sometimes can be unexpected, but it can also be expected, and it's not necessarily something that you need to worry about. Another interesting line in this display is the hold memory. And the hold memory, to dig a little further into this concept of memory caching, the hold memory is a amount of memory that has been set aside by the Data Power device for caching. And there's lots of different caches on the Data Power device. We'll talk about some of them in more detail later on. Some of these caches are configurable, and some of these caches are not configurable. The hold memory is a cache on the Data Power device. It's a relatively low-level memory cache, which is not configurable. And what hold memory essentially does is that when there is some service on Data Power that needs to request a buffer, say a 1 megabyte buffer for some reason, such as a style sheet transform, and the box is first initially booted, this hold memory cache will be pretty much empty. And if there's a request for 1 megabyte, then that goes down to the lowest level of the memory management code to go find that 1 megabyte from the free memory that we have available. That is passed up through the hold cache, and that is used by the transaction to do its transform. And after that is done, that transaction is complete. That memory will be returned to the hold memory cache. At that point, that buffer is not all returned all the way down to the bottom layer, but rather is kept in this hold memory cache. And so one would expect to see that the used memory would generally rise during the transaction and fall when that memory is sent back to the hold, and then the hold memory will show that it has this 1 megabyte buffer. And then that buffer is kept around for the next time a similar size allocation is needed by a different transaction. And this results in an improvement in the performance of the device, as it sometimes can be expensive to allocate in free memory. And so we put this in this cache so that typically for transforms, for instance, and we'll talk about this in a little more detail later on, most transforms on a particular service, a particular device, all tend to use a similar size buffer of memory. And so by taking these buffers and putting them into the cache, it prevents them from getting fragmented and prevents the device from having to do any type of memory shuffling around to reallocate a sufficient sized buffer. It gets put in the cache, and then typically it'll very quickly be taken back out of the cache again by the next transform that needs this 1 megabyte sized buffer. So the hold memory is a way that we use to increase the performance of the device, and you can see the size of the hold memory as it grows up and goes down depending on need. So the question you might ask then is, why exactly do we expose the size of the hold memory cache then if it is not configurable? Well, that's a good question, and the reason basically is that looking at the hold memory can tell you a little bit about how the device is running, and about sort of the general health of the device. So, the hold memory will grow up as more and more concurrent transforms are run and then complete, and then that hold memory will go down as things are taken out of it, and then the hold memory can actually be sort of cleared or collected again and sent back down to the lower level a memory allocator if there is a request for a larger buffer, which cannot be met by the available free memory at that time. So if you happen to see that the hold memory counter is tending to rise up and stay steady, that's relatively normal. And even if the hold memory number is high and stays high, that's not necessarily a cause of concern. But if the hold memory is continuously rising up and then plunging back down and then rising up and plunging back down again, that means that there's some interesting memory allocation patterns that are going on which require large fixed size buffers of memory. And that might be an indication to take a look at how your device is configured and if it regularly would be expected to use large continuous buffers of memory. And this can let you think about some configuration options on your device which might need more larger single blocks of memory, such as certain extension functions or calls to side services such as databases, or particular configuration options you might have for transforms or style sheets. Some of these things can be configured by you and can affect about if the device is going to be using large buffers of memory or not. Also, some streaming options can affect this as well. And so we expose the hold memory so that you can have an idea about these types of potentially problematic configurations, and it's an interesting thing to take a look at to see if devices is healthy or not. So moving back onto slide number four again briefly. So we talked, we talked about hold memory and the memory usage. Now, what is requested memory? Requested memory is a similar cache that sits on top of hold memory. And the requested memory is sort of a counter that tells you, you know, the amount of transactions that are in use right now, and how much of the memory available that they're taking up. But by itself, actually, the requested memory is not terribly useful, so we don't often recommend that customers track that too closely. And then, of course, the last two numbers, the used memory, free memory, are pretty self-explanatory. So just to summarize from this status provider, the show memory output is probably one of the single most important status providers to track on your device for the health of the device, to find out if it can handle the load that is being put upon it, and if the device is staying healthy over a period of time. And so looking at that memory usage percentage is vitally important for understanding how well your devices are working. And then of secondary importance is also taking a look at the hold memory and understanding how that typically behaves on your device, pulling that regularly and then, you know, graphing the results and seeing if there's things that can perhaps be learned about that. Okay, moving on to slide number five. Thank you. So this is the other main status provider we have, the show load. And the show load is slightly different because it takes the more granular view that we had in the previous slide, and now this is a more aggregate view of what the different tasks are on the device and how they are working. And so typically you always have the main task, and just about everybody has SSH task, and then depending on your features that you bought and the configurations you use, you might see other things such as ODBC or WTX or some other things in the future might appear here as well. And then those are each broken out by the load worklist, CPU memory, and file counts. And I won't talk in all these in too much detail because we want to focus mostly on just a memory on this this talk. But the load is interesting just because that's an instantaneous counter from 0 to 100 about how busy that task is at the time. And that can bounce around quite a bit. And so by itself, it's actually hard to tell much about what the load number is telling you. Worklist is a little bit more interesting because the worklist is a number that can go from 0 to infinity, really. And it is a measure of the work that has been waiting to get done by the device. And so, you know, the worklist can go up and down as things get busy and things get less busy, but it's an instantaneous counter, and in general, one would not expect to see it get very high. If you graph the worklist and you see that over time, it tends to increase, never really materially decrease, that can be an indication that the device is overloaded. CPU is an average measure, and that can be useful just to see in general how busy your device is. Now, the memory number here is interesting, and the memory here differs from the memory on the previous slide in the sense that it aggregates a lot of the different caches that we were talking about previously into total number. So generally, this statistic for the memory will tend to be higher than the memory usage on the previous slide. And that's because it is counting not just the memory that is being used by transactions at this point in time, but also memory that is being held in caches. So whereas in the previous slide, that memory usage, if that were ever to get too high and start getting up to 80, 90, 100% memory used, that's generally an indication that things are being pushed beyond the limits and things that are shortly going to go wrong and the device would be throttling. If this memory counter here on the show load page were to get up actually to 80, 90, 100%, then that's not necessarily a concern, because that 100% memory usage could actually include large amounts of memory that are being held in different caches. And so the box might actually be running fine. It could be that the device is caching a lot of memory, but it's not necessarily running out of memory. And so we advise people that if they're going to track a limited number of statistics, then it's better to track the memory from slide number 4 than it is the memory from this particular show load statistic. Okay, can we move on to slide number? Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention the file count. Very briefly, file count is just a number that goes up to indicate the total number of files or TCP connections or sockets and such that may be open on the device at any one time. And interesting counter to track to see if there might be any leak there, but in general, it is not a main statistic that you need to worry about too closely. Okay, moving on to slide number 6, please. Okay, SLM. Moses, did you want to talk about SLM?
Yeah. Thank you, Matthias. So talk a little bit about SLM, which just means service level monitoring, and you know this is a processing action that you can use on your processing rule to rate limit you know transactions that go to like your backend. In most cases, this is something that you want to, you know, use to protect against, you know, out-of-memory conditions that can happen on the box when your backend actually slows down, right? So if you identify a path to a backend that has the tendency to be slow, you can set this up to, you know, maybe protect against the number of concurrent transactions you want to have. And, you know, you can set up SLM to either, you know, throttle or reject, like, the messages. Or if certain, you know, conditions are met, you might just want to log a message. And in other cases, you want to do what is called shipping, right? So shipping is, you know, going to make data power actually hold on to transactions and until the condition or whatever SLM statement that you have defined, until that threshold decreases, you know, the transactions will continue to get queued up. So using SLM with, you know, shipping can be very complicated. You know, at the time that the, you know, box has to decide on what, you know, action to take, the device would have, you know, allocated some memory to ensure that the transaction you know can start you know processing right or can start executing. So in this case the memory that is going to be allocated is to ensure that at least you know one transform can be executed, and in certain cases the input message will have to be parsed. Now, the amount of, you know, memory that is allocated can, you know, vary based on the configuration that you have. In most cases, this is, you know, dependent on the compile options policy that is, you know, defined. So if you have a stack size, you know, defined for your style sheets to, you know, execute, that is going to affect the amount of, you know, memory that gets allocated at this point. Now, the queuing that, you know, happens, what is going to happen is data power will allow 2,500 you know, transactions to be queued up during a phase where the threshold is, you know, has reached. So until your transaction is complete, you can have all these, you know, transactions that are, you know, being held up, and that can also affect the, you know, amount of memory. If, let's say, those transactions actually use up a lot of memory, right? So this limit on the queue is not something that you can, you know, configure. So sometimes you have to, you know, keep that in mind when you have large messages that you have to process, and all of this has to be queued up. You have to, you know, keep that in mind. So there are some best practices around this when you have to do SLM with shaping. In certain cases, you might want to consider having an additional statement added to your SLM, you know, policy, where you might want to look at the number of concurrent, you know, transactions that are, you know, still in flight, right? And maybe set a threshold on that, where once that threshold reaches, you want to start rejecting rather than, you know, continue to shape. So, you know, this is something that you have to consider. And there is a developer work, you know, article in the it's on one of the slides, you know, labeled some resources. If you review that, you actually get, you know, some other cases where you might need to use SLM shaping and what the best, you know, practices are. In certain cases, you also have to combine that with other monitors, you know, like the message, you know, duration monitor, where if, let's say, transactions are taking longer to complete and maybe the threshold for your shipping has exceeded, you might want to, you know, start, you know, combining some of these other monitors to, you know, help you have a better control of how much memory is, you know, used, you know, due to the in-flight transactions. I'm not sure if you want to add anything, you know, Matthias. If not, we can move to slide number 7.
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, so another thing that, you know, needs to be considered is during processing, there are certain times where, you know, you might not want an action to hold up further processing of the transaction, right? So in certain cases, you want to make that action instead of executing synchronously to be async, right? So what happens is when you have an async transaction, you have these, you know, transactions running parallel with the other actions. And until the transaction completes on the box, resources that are tied to it are going to be also held up, right? So if we look at a scenario where, let's say, you know, when a transaction comes in, you want to log that transaction. So you kind of make a side call, but you don't want that, you know, login to delay further processing of the transaction. So you might set that, you know, login action to be asynchronous, right? And everything is going to, you know, go fine. But what is going to happen is when your log server gets overloaded, you know, due to the number of transactions that are coming, you might end up having, you know, although it looks like the transaction or the client got its response back, you know, you end up having this async call that is also yet to complete, right? So, you know, until that transaction completes, that the memory is put in the hold cache, right? And it cannot be shared or it cannot be given to another transaction. So all of this can still cause your memory utilization to continue to increase, you know, depending on how long your, you know, transactions are lasting and the number of transactions that the box is, you know, trying to, you know, process. Right, so using async, you know, action, you know, can be very tricky, and in a way, you know, it can be similar to SLM shaping, right? So When you use asynchronous, you know, actions, you just have to keep in mind the situation that until that async also completes, whatever resources that were allocated for that transaction hasn't been freed yet. So in the case that you do a spin-off and you make this, let's say, login call, what you want to do is, you know, make sure if that path, so anytime that you have a path that has a tendency to slow down, you know, the best practice is to try and, you know, utilize SLM on that path, you know, just so that you don't get overloaded, you know, transactions where, you know, now you have your login, which is not, which might not be as important, you know, compared to transaction processing, but that slowdown on your login, you know, can cause, you know, data power to, you know, use up a lot of resources, which in turn is going to limit the amount of resources available to process your transactions, right? So, you know, when you use asynchronous, you know, actions, you know, ensure that you keep some of these things in mind. And once again, the developer work article that is referenced later on in the resource area, you know, has some best practices that should be considered.
Okay. Moses, is actually, if I could just jump in for a second,
yes,
just to talk a little bit more about point number three there, which you you mentioned. This is something that is often a point of confusion for customers because sometimes, for example, they'll have a use case where they just want to make a asynchronous call to a log server with a little XML document of maybe 1K in size that has some data that they want to log. And they do that asynchronously to avoid slowing down the main transaction. But then the log server, when it gets overwhelmed, it gets backed up and can't acknowledge all the data being sent to it. And then the device starts to run out of memory, and the question is often asked, well, if it's just 1K, then you know, how much problem could that really cause? But in fact, each asynchronous call, as Moses is saying, I just want to make sure this is really clear, each call will have links and pointers back to pretty much all the other memory that is being used by that transaction, which is typically driven by the transforms. That's, on most configurations, by default, the largest single contributor to memory. So that can generally, by default, be around 500K of memory. And so each little side call will still be holding on to a large amount of memory, even if the call by itself is not using much. And this is driven in part by, again, some of the decisions that were made that we cache things aggressively in order to prove latency. And so this can have the effect that sometimes transactions will use more memory than you might expect. Excuse me. Okay, thank you, Moses.
Yeah, and then also, thing for this, you know, Flo, thanks, Matthias. You might also want to look at, you know, ensuring that you tune your timeouts so that, you know, when things are taking longer, you can, you know, time out those, you know, calls that are being made. So just wanted to, you know, add to that as well. And can we please move to slide number 8, and Dominic will take us through, you know, caches.
Thanks, Moses. So we're going to go over two types of caches that Data Power holds. You have the document cache and the style sheet cache. Both of these reside inside the XML manager object, so you can do all your configuration changes through there. Starting with the document cache, this is primarily going to be XML documents and AAA data. So if you have a AAA action for security policy, you're going to find documents in this cache. By default, it is disabled, but it is highly recommended to be enabled. It's just a matter of setting it up properly to make sure it's effective. So starting out, if you're inside the XML manager object, there's going to be the document cache tab, and this is inside the XML manager object. And this will allow you to customize the cache count, which by default is 5,000 documents, and the cache size, which is set in bytes. So keep that in mind when you you set the value of how large you want your document cache to be, because this is going to be an overall size setting. So, for example, if you only set it to 5,000 bytes, you cannot put a 6,000-byte XML document in there. It will not allow that. The other tab, the Document Cache Policy tab, is also inside the XML Manager. This one is going to allow you to set the URIs which will apply to your document cache. So, for example, you can have local files or even remote, like an HTTP server, and you can use a wildcard, you know, asterisk to supply, like, multiple sites or directories, et cetera. The other option in there that is important is the time to live for the document. So obviously, in most situations, you'd want a longer time to live for, like, XML documents that you do not expect to be changing frequently. So you just do not spend the additional time to parse those documents more than required. The part that is important to also note is that the memory is located on the temporary RAM disk for these files. So it's already reserved space on the physical memory. So you're not going to have a problem with transactions, you know, taking up the memory needed to handle these documents. So, you know, as I mentioned, AAA is also included in here. The thing that's important to note about AAA is that although they're very small files, you're talking a couple hundred bytes, maybe a kilobyte at most, the problem you'll find is that there are a lot of them. For example, if you have a lot of distinct users coming in, user 1, user 2, user 3, those are all going to have their own distinct entry in the document cache. And you want to make sure that your document cache count will reflect the amount of entries that you're going to accept in there, because you do not want documents having to compete for space in the cache. So that's important to remember. The existing entries that are expired will overwrite each other. So, for example, AAA entry, you have user 1 come in, and he doesn't come back for, let's say, an hour later. And let's say that the time to live had already expired at that point. So that expired entry is still going to exist in the cache, but what DataPower will do is it's going to reuse that entry. It'll do the work that it needs to do in AAA and then take that new compiled document and put it in the document cache. If you run into an event where your document cache count is completely used, so, for example, the default 5,000, so you have 5,000 entries in there, what DataPower will do is if it needs to put a new document in the document cache, it's going to look for an expired entry and replace the expired entry with the new document. What's important to note for the status providers is you have the document caching summary. This will give you the overall usage, for example, the count of documents currently in use against your overall, as well as the actual total byte size of all the documents. You will also have the Document Status Simple Index provider, and this one will actually tell you the document URI. So, for example, AAA:// with it'll be a bunch of garble that you won't understand, but pretty much it'll tell you the document name, identification, whatever you want to consider it, as well as the expiration date. So if it's going to expire, it'll have the actual date of when it's going to expire, or it will say that it is expired. Can we please move to slide 9? So this slide, we're just going to go briefly over the style sheet cache. By default, this is allowing 256 documents, which extends to style sheets, your XSL files, schemas, the XSD files, and WSDLs for each XML manager. It's important that if you have, for example, a very large set of web service proxies inside a single domain, that you try to avoid using just the default XML manager, because you know, if you have multiple services and they're all trying to use that same XML manager, you're going to have a problem where if you go over that 256 limit, you're going to have to compile documents. And simply to avoid that issue, you most likely want to define a unique XML manager for the service. If you do have style sheets shared between services, you can have an XML manager shared. Just make sure that you do not go over the 256 limit, or you can increase it if necessary. I already pointed out the type of documents that go in there. You do not need to put these files, the XSD, XSL, WSDL files, in your document cache, because that will not serve any purpose. So what I would advise is, if you're setting up a document cache policy, that you have a wildcard for WSDL, XSD, XSL to have a no cache setting, and that will make sure that you don't waste that space in the document cache policy. For the style sheet cache, you do not have the ability to set the overall size of the documents, only the document count. This particular memory is actually in use memory. Matthias can correct me if I'm wrong there, but I do not believe this is actually part of the temporary RAM disk. So this will use your normal physical memory that you see in ShowMem. The style sheet caching summary status provider will give you the overall count of documents currently cached, as well as the cache size. What's important to note is, in the style sheet caching summary, the cache overall size is actually in kilobytes, whereas for the document cache for XML and AAA files is actually in byte size. So make sure you note that. The other status provider is style sheet status simple index. This will tell you the compile time of the document, when it was last refreshed, and if that document was actually compiled successfully or not. I don't have anything else to add to this right now. If Matthias, you have anything to add, feel free.
No, I'm good, thanks.
Okay, great. So I'm going to pass it back to Matthias for slide 10 to review memory stacks. Thanks.
Okay, so this last thing I touched on briefly before, but I wanted to add a little more detail. So I had said earlier that the memory usage of a particular transaction is generally driven by the style sheet transforms. What I mean by that is that most devices, most services generally tend to process, you know, smaller documents, things less than a few hundred kilobytes. And our device, after it has finished reading and parsing a document, it does tend to inflate the size of a document, the amount of memory used by it. But even so, for most services that we've seen, the amount of memory used by the actual data is not very high. However, style sheets do tend to require more memory usage, and that is actually a configurable option, which not everyone is aware of. And that configuration option is set for the XML manager in the compile options policy by what's known as the stack size. And this stack size is by default half a megabyte. So that's a fairly large amount of memory. And this memory, you know, is allocated as a contiguous block of memory when the transform action begins. And then within a particular transaction, this memory will be cached for the duration of the transaction so that, you know, if it's typical that there's multiple transforms within a request rule, response rule, they can reuse the same block of memory without having to allocate and free it multiple times. But this setting is one size for all the transforms within a transaction. And transactions, you know, depending on what they're doing, can use more or less of the whole stack as needed. And it's actually fairly complex to understand how much of the stack a transform will take. I think that's a discussion for another time. But generally what will happen is that if you have a transform that is particularly complex and it ends up using up the entire stack, then there is a safe, you know, runtime exception that is thrown, which will tell you that the transform reached the top of the stack and it couldn't complete the transform, so the action is aborted. So what this means is that by default, when you have your data power device and you start, you know, running transforms through it, that you'll be setting aside 500 kilobytes for each transform that is going on. But there's a little twist to that, which is that the way our device allocates memory, there's a little bit of overhead for each allocation. And allocations are done, at least in most of the recent firmwares, as a power of two. So they tend to get rounded up. So actually, when we were saying that the setting for the default stack size is 500 kilobytes, that actually means that about a megabyte of memory will be used for each transform action in your rule. And so this is quite often the largest single driver of memory usage in a typical configuration when using, you know, smaller data sets. So this is a setting which we have seen people don't often, very often think to touch. But it's actually, if you're looking at tuning the scalability of your services and understanding, you know, how much memory is going to be needed by the device, people very often tend to focus on the size of the data that's coming in and coming out of the device, of the services. But actually, the transform stacks tends to dominate. And it's definitely some place to look at if you are testing the scalability of your services and trying to understand how much memory they will be needing as part of the typical usage. Okay, all right. If we could move on then to slide 11, please. Okay, so to wrap things up, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, data power memory does not have any virtual memory. So it's important to understand your system when it's in production, how much memory it typically is expected to use, how much memory it will be using when there's other services which might be slow. How is your device protected against denial of service attacks, which might cause a memory flood from the front end, or how your device might react if there is back end services or other side calls which may be slow and not responsive enough. And managing all this can be a little bit complex, but it's important to be able to understand that for the healthier device, so that you don't end up in a situation where the device is starting to run low on memory and needs to throttle what may be, you know, business critical traffic due to potentially a less critical service which has improper configuration and then ends up using up too much of the memory on the device. So you know, take a look at how you use asynchronous actions, if at all. Tune your timeouts correctly so that you don't end up having transactions sitting around for minutes waiting for some non-existent server when there is no need for them to do so. Make sure you set up SLM and monitors and other settings to be able to limit the amount of memory that's consumed by particular services on the device to prevent out-of-memory conditions. And make sure you tune the size of the caches appropriately so that you're caching everything that should be cached but not allocating excessive amounts of memory to caches which aren't needed. All right, and then move on to slide 12. I believe that's everything for this this talk. I just wanted to mention we did have a couple of TechNotes and DeveloperWorks articles that are out there which are really great to look at, and I would please encourage everyone to dig into those areas as much as possible. Okay. Thank you, everyone. David, back to you.
Thank you, Matthias and Moses, for a great presentation. Slide 13 has some additional WebSphere product resources, which we hope you would find useful. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
There are no questions at this time.
Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Matthias and Moses, for presenting today.